This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The United States Supreme Court last Friday allowed sales of a medication abortion pill called Mifepristone to continue, while a lawsuit brought by a Christian fundamentalist group wends its way through courts. The ruling brought a sigh of relief to a nation where not even a year has passed since the Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade abortion precedent. But the future of accessible medication-induced abortion remains highly uncertain. My guest is Imani Gandhi, former attorney turned award-winning journalist and political blogger. She's currently the editor-at-large for Rewire News Group, where she covers law and courts and co-hosts the podcast Boom Lawyered. Welcome to the program, Imani.
Thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about the fact that this lawsuit is being brought by an organization that claims it cares about the health of, people who might be taking this medication, and that it's just not safe made available. The FDA says there's decades of data. Obviously, this is not a group that's to be trusted with its intentions, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this was an organization based in Tennessee that I believe incorporated in Amarillo, Texas, just for the sole purpose of being able to bring this case in the Amarillo division of the Northern District of Texas, where they are assured to get Judge Matt Kaczmarek, who is this rogue Trump judge who has essentially been at the center of this firestorm. This organization is not serious. They're comprised of quote unquote pro-life activist doctors, none of whom practice in Texas, none of whom have any relationship when it comes to prescribing mifepristone, and I think only a handful of whom have any interaction with anyone who's had a complication stemming from mifepristone. And so they've made these truly bonkers arguments about why they should have standing to sue, not on behalf of themselves, but on behalf of an organization that overarches them, and on behalf of these, you know, so-called post-abortive women who are so full of shame and stigma that they can't sue themselves. I mean, it's absolutely preposterous. And yet, you know, it got through the Northern District of Texas, it got through the Fifth Circuit and was stopped at the Supreme Court, much to the surprise of myself and a lot of other legal scholars who were really waiting for the Supreme Court to do its worst on the shadow docket when it comes to mifepristone. But it's completely safe. There are decades of studies in the United States showing that it's safe, and then decades of studies in Europe showing that it's safe. So the fact that these pro-life activist doctors are relying on essentially junk science and bunk studies to sort of make it seem as if, quote unquote, chemical abortion is as dangerous as fentanyl or methamphetamines is truly just belies the absurd nature of this lawsuit.
And it also seems like it's going to, if this does get banned, the other medication that it's supposed to work with, misoprostol, and I'm not an expert, but from what I read, that too can serve as an abortion medication, but it's not as foolproof, it's not as safe, and it has slightly more risks than misoprostol. So this is, so I'm wondering, if they really cared about the health of women, this would be a very different lawsuit, right?
Well, I mean, they ipso facto do not care about the health of women, because the matter of fact is that there have been something like, according to the FDA, 28 deaths related to medication abortion, not even stemming directly from medication abortion, but just, there was a homicide somehow included in the study, which means I don't know if someone got upset that a person was using medication abortion and killed them for it, but 28 deaths out of 5.6 million abortions. This is not a procedure that is unsafe. This is a medication that is more safe than Tylenol, that is more safe than Viagra, that is more safe than a whole host of medications that are not under the gun, because they are not related to abortion. Essentially, what these doctors want people to believe is that abortion is something other than healthcare, and therefore the FDA doesn't really have any approval authority when it comes to something like mifepristone because of the fact that mifepristone, quote unquote, kills babies. And that's really what this case is about. It's not about whether or not it's unsafe for women and pregnant people, because it's wildly safe. It's about the fact that this drug does what it's supposed to do. It terminates pregnancies. And in the mind of the anti-choicer, that's killing a baby. So the reason why this drug is unsafe is not because it's unsafe for the people who take it, it's unsafe for the fetus. And I think that's really, I mean, you can see it in Kaczmarek's order. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the quote unborn person and the way the medication affects the unborn person. It doesn't even matter how the medication affects the woman or the pregnant person, because that's not the person that is centered in this story. What is centered in this story and this narrative is the quote unquote fetus, the quote unquote preborn human.
And in fact, pregnancy and childbirth are more dangerous to people. Let's talk about Kaczmarek, this lawyer, this judge that you mentioned. He's a Trump appointed judge, and the organization, the Alliance for, I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly what their name is, but the Christian organization that brought the lawsuit did it deliberately in Amarillo, Texas, in his jurisdiction. Isn't this the most direct evidence that you have of the importance of paying attention to judicial appointments? They've, of course, been able to then send this to the Supreme Court, where there are 3 out of 9 Trump appointees. And it's really important, right, this aspect?
It's absolutely important. And it's particularly important when it comes to Republican appointed judges, because whether or not it was Trump appointed or if somebody else had won, the real people behind the appointment of judges to the federal court, of justices to the Supreme Court, it's the Federalist Society. It's Leonard Leo and his billions of dark money, right? This isn't a democratic process. This isn't a process by which, you know, a Democrat wins the presidency and then everyone says, well, yeah, okay, this Democrat has the authority under the Constitution to appoint just judges and justices. No, what we saw under Obama was the Federalist Society essentially saying, no, we're not going to allow you to do your constitutional duty and appoint a judge to replace Antonin Scalia. We're going to make up some rule about how we have to wait until after the election. Of course, rules that did not apply, for example, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and they appointed Amy Coney Barrett to the bench after voting had already begun. So this is a court that has been captured by the Federalist Society. It's been captured by conservative Christians, and almost every opinion that comes out of this court is outcome determinative. So, you know, the fact that there are 3 Trump appointed judges on the Supreme Court is not as important as the fact that there are 6 Federalist Society adjacent justices on the Supreme Court. Mm. That's really what's important.
Now, Imani, tell me about Justice Samuel Alito's dissent to the decision on Friday to allow sales of mifepristone to continue while the lawsuit works its way. How concerned should we be? What did he say, and how concerned should we be?
Well, what's interesting about Alito's opinion is that it actually made me change my mind about what the outcome of this case is going to be. I think there's a much greater chance that the Supreme Court, when it eventually reaches the issue, I think there's a much greater chance that they will kick the case on standing, because the arguments being made by these doctors on standing are absolutely preposterous. And Alito's dissent was not only bad faith, but it was belligerent and obnoxious, right? I mean, essentially, he claimed that because the liberals on the court were criticizing the Supreme Court for not intervening on SB 8, right? Last year, last September, when the court had an opportunity to intervene and say that this bounty hunter law that was cooked up by this lawyer named Jonathan Mitchell and that was deployed in Texas, that particular law should be enjoined pending appeal, pending litigation. And so because Samuel Alito is angry that Elena Kagan and the other liberals on the court criticized them for making that ruling on the shadow docket, he now turns around and says that because that somehow Kagan and the liberals on the court were being hypocritical by not announcing their reasons for staying Kaczmarek's order. But what's important is not who spoke about a stay and when. What's important is that the Supreme Court is making these very controversial rulings on the shadow docket. What was critical about SB 8 was not the fact that Elena Kagan criticized Alito for not intervening. It was that those justices should have intervened and stayed the order, because what that order did was essentially end abortion in Texas 9 months before the Supreme Court went on to tell us why it was ending abortion nationwide in the Dobbs case. Alito's dissent also really quite obnoxiously makes a claim with respect to Danco Laboratories. That's the pharmaceutical company that is basically arguing that the FDA should be able to continue to authorize this drug, because doing otherwise would cause regulatory chaos, would cause commercial chaos in the marketplace. What Alito is arguing with respect to them is that they shouldn't be able to make these arguments because the Biden administration has not even decided that it would necessarily enforce the law against Danco. So now we have Alito saying that there would be no irreparable harm against Danco Laboratories because the Biden administration has not claimed that it would enforce the law against Danco Laboratories. That's a stunning thing to say. It is stunning to argue that a company or a litigant or a party to a case won't face irreparable harm because of a prosecutorial decision that has nothing to do with the case. I mean, the dissent was absolutely bad faith, and it was very salty, which makes me think that he was unable to convince anyone besides Alito to sign on to the dissent. You know, you notice that Barrett and Kavanaugh and Roberts, I think, would probably kick the case on standing because he would have done so in SB 8. But we're looking at Barrett and Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, and I think Alito is salty that he wasn't able to get any two of those people to sign on to an order that would have upheld Kaczmarek's lawless order.
And actually, I'm wondering about that. Is it possible that at least one or two of the conservatives on the court are a little bit cowed by the public backlash to last year's decision on Roe? There was a poll showing 2/3 of Americans, and that includes something like 30 or 40% of Republicans, think that the abortion pill should be accessible to all Americans. So I'm wondering if they're a little bit worried, one hopes, about going too far.
I'm not sure if they're worried about going too far. I think they're worried about using this particular case to do essentially what they were put on the bench to do, right? There are justices who were put on the Supreme Court bench specifically to overturn Roe versus Wade, which they did, and then to help anti-choicers criminalize abortion, right? To help a nationwide ban go into effect. What allowing Kaczmarek's order to stand would have essentially initiated a 7-week national ban, right? Because medication abortion can be used up to 7 weeks. I think that because the standing arguments are so bad, because this case is so meritless, I think there are justices who don't want to use this case to attack medication abortion. I think they want a better case. I don't know what that case is. I think there are a lot of cases that are sort of percolating with respect to whether or not the Comstock Act applies to medication abortion, with respect to whether or not Big Pharma would have standing to continue to produce, for example, generic formulations of mifepristone, because you have to remember what the Fifth Circuit order did was roll back access to pre-2016 levels. So we're going to see a lot of, I think, shenanigans in the lower court. And what the Supreme Court chooses to do, I think, may have something to do with backlash. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't think anyone is particularly concerned about the court as a legitimate institution besides Roberts. And because Roberts is only one person and there are still five other justices who I don't think particularly care, I'm not sure issues like Clarence Thomas and issues like Neil Gorsuch, who was just found to have sold a property to a law firm merely 9 days after he was appointed to the bench. That information came out on Tuesday. I don't think that this court is particularly concerned about ethics any longer.
I mean, not to mention Clarence Thomas and all of his dealings with the billionaire.
Right. And Samuel Alito himself, I mean, you recall that a few months ago, we found out that Samuel Alito had leaked the Hobby Lobby decision, right? Mm-hmm. The Hobby Lobby decision related to whether or not for-profit corporations could refuse to provide birth control in their health insurance policies. Sam Alito leaked that opinion, right? So this is a court that is not particularly concerned with ethics. This is a court that is concerned with cozying up to big moneyed interests, right? To interests that are opposed to the civil rights that most of the people that I think are watching this program hold dear. I don't think they care that much. I think they care about their friends and high places, essentially.
Finally, Imani, what's next now? Where does this lawsuit, we have access to the abortion medication, as this lawsuit is going through, what is expected to happen next?
On May 17th, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to hear oral arguments. And so that, who knows how long it will be after the court, after those arguments that panel will rule. Once the panel rules, whichever way it goes, I would expect the losing party to seek a rehearing before the full Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. That could take another couple of months. So we're looking at several months at least before the Supreme Court gets another bite at this case. Prior to the Supreme Court extending the stay, I would have thought that we might have heard merits argument this term. I think we're definitely not going to do that. I think we're going to hear merits arguments on this case next term. But in the meantime, you know, we've got these Comstock Act cases that are creeping up, right? There are, you know, Jonathan Mitchell, as I said, is basically seeking a court to rule that the Comstock Act applies to all medication abortion and not just illegal medication abortion. He's looking for a particular ruling that would then tee up the Comstock Act for a ruling by the Supreme Court. So everything is moving very quickly. And the fact that we are not yet, as you said earlier, a year out from Dobbs, and we are already sort of this much in the muck and the mire, I think is very concerning about abortion rights and generally human rights in this country.
Imani, thank you as always so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Imani Gandhi, former attorney turned award-winning journalist and political blogger. She's currently the editor-at-large for Rewire News Group, where she covers law and the courts and co-hosts of the podcast Boom Lawyered. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.